Americans noticed that there was a young Cambodian girl, maybe 5 years old, who was shot and bleeding, lying on the ground. They wanted to take her for medical care. But the officer who dragged the motorbike on board said negative. They were weighed down by the bike and they had no room. And they left this girl there to die. This happened after Henry Kissinger gave that order to anything that flies and anything that moves. So this is Henry Kissinger's legacy. And this is what Anthony Bourdain was talking about.
Intercept reporter Nick Terse will link to your four-part series, including the piece Blood on His Hands, Survivors of Kissinger's Secret War in Cambodia Reveal Unreported Mass Killings. And we want to thank Yale University professor Greg Grandin, author of the book Kissinger's Shadow. We'll link to your new article, Henry Kissinger, a War Criminal Still at Large at 100. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
KBOO Radio is hiring. We are accepting applications for an engagement coordinator. The engagement coordinator is responsible for sharing KBOO's mission and values across a variety of social media platforms. They also share content created by volunteers and co-sponsors. We are looking for individuals who have skills writing marketing copy and creating and editing graphic and multimedia content. To apply, send your resume and cover letter to hiring@kboo.org. Applications are due by midnight Sunday, June 4th. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. For more information, go to kboo.fm/engagement-hire.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, families still struggle with the delayed police response to one of the nation's deadliest mass shootings.
In Portland, TriMet votes to increase fares for riders.
And in national news, two more southern states enact six-week abortion bans.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 24th, 2023. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Reed Johnson. Today marks 1 year since a teenage gunman entered Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, and fatally shot 19 children and two teachers. It remains the deadliest shooting in Texas history. The families of the victims are still struggling with grief and tension in the small town, as those families have been seeking increased accountability for the delayed response by law enforcement. On that day, it took 376 officers from over 20 agencies 77 minutes to finally confront and stop the shooter. Only four of the officers who responded from state and local agencies that day were actually fired, while most still remain on the job in Uvalde. To attempt to rebuild trust with the community, Uvalde's mayor hired a police chief from outside of town, and the local district attorney's office is currently conducting a criminal investigation of the response. Meanwhile, the Washington Post reports that many families have turned their focus to trying to change Texas gun laws. So far, Texas state legislature has been reluctant to do so. In fact, the Giffords Law Center reports that since the shooting a year ago, state governments across the United States have passed more laws expanding gun access than they have to further gun control.
1,400 frontline nurses at Providence Portland in Providence Seaside will vote to consider a strike starting today. The vote comes after 8 months of difficult negotiations and what the nurses say is a limited response from Providence management on a host of issues. Those issues include staffing to cover the decline in the number of available nurses due to burnout, increased pay and paid leave, and benefit improvements. The Oregon Nurses Association is the union representing Providence nurses, and they say Providence has not stepped up to offer a pay and benefit package that will keep these frontline healthcare professionals working in such a labor-intensive, high-stress field. Richard Botterell is an RN and the bargaining unit chair at Providence. He says, quote, "If Providence doesn't change course or address short staffing, nurses will continue to leave the bedside. The quality of patient care will suffer, and Providence will let down our community," end quote. Voting on the strike authorization will close on June 4th.
Workers from the Portland Starbucks location at the 5th and Oak U.S. Bank building decided to continue a strike which began yesterday. The company plans to permanently close its location on June 2nd, saying the closure is for safety reasons. Employees, however, claim shuttering the shop is a union-busting move since Starbucks Workers United unionized the location, as well as 18 others, in the past year. This Starbucks was also the site of multiple labor actions, including the large May Day rally last year and the Red Cup Rebellion last November. Lunette Wimberly is one of the lead union organizers at the downtown location. She says tomorrow, workers will negotiate with Starbucks officials about the closure.
Tomorrow is our effects bargaining, so this will be the moment where Starbucks will negotiate with us over the details of our closure. And we have several stores that we have decided that we want to spread apart into in order to make our new communities. And so we're going to go to the table and fight about it.
Since the wave of unionization in the Portland area, Starbucks has closed three of the unionized stores and fired three union organizers.
Both North and South Carolina approved laws banning abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy yesterday. The North Carolina State Assembly overrode Governor Roy Cooper's veto of the bill, thanks to a female Democratic legislator who recently changed parties and also her position on abortion. North Carolina's ban does make exceptions for rape, incest, and life-limiting fetal anomalies. The South Carolina Senate passed their six-week ban after a filibuster led by five women senators, including three Republicans, failed to block it. The governor of South Carolina has indicated he will sign the bill, which also requires any woman seeking an abortion to first have two in-person doctor's visits and two ultrasounds. South Carolina had become a destination for women seeking abortions from other states with strict abortion laws. Since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last June, at least 25 states have moved to restrict abortion, with 14 of those states now banning most procedures.
The TriMet Board of Directors has approved a fare increase that will go into effect on January 1st, 2024. The increase will apply to day passes and 2.5-hour tickets, but does not affect monthly fares and caps for riders who use the Hop Fast Pass. KGW reports that as of January 1st, baseline fares will go up by 30 cents. This means the regular 2.5-hour ticket will go from $2.50 to $2.80, and all-day passes will increase from $5 to $5.60. Honored citizen and youth tickets will go up by 15% to $1.40. This is the first price hike for TriMet riders since 2012 and is expected to grow the fare revenue the agency collects by $5.3 million annually. TriMet says the increased revenue is needed to meet public transportation needs, which includes a 30% expansion of service from pandemic levels. Meanwhile, the Portland Mercury reports that climate and social justice advocates have pushed back against the plan, saying it will be detrimental to the city's equity and environmental goals.
The ongoing walkout by Oregon Senate Republicans leaves the fate of many important pending bills up in the air, including those that address hunger in our state. Eric Tegetoff has more on the story.
3 weeks into state Senate Republicans' walkout from the Oregon legislature, concern is growing that the move could sink action on important issues such as addressing hunger in the state. Head of Oregon Food Bank Susanna Morgan says rates of hunger are still above pre-pandemic levels, and it's anticipated the food assistance system in the state will serve more than 1 million people this year.
This is a crisis that so many of us need help feeding our families. And in order to meet that crisis, we need our government to work.
Republicans walked out on May 3rd in part because of a bill that would expand abortion rights and further protect transgender health care. Senate Republicans have pledged to come back on the final day of the session, scheduled for June 25th, to pass bipartisan bills. Morgan says one day does not give the legislature enough time to pass a number of important bills. She says one important measure is Senate Bill 610, which would ensure that people who are undocumented can receive food assistance. It's estimated more than 62,000 Oregonians are excluded from federal food aid.
This would really, really, really help us address this deep hunger crisis, and that is stuck because nothing is moving in the Oregon legislature right now.
Morgan says she's asking Republican senators to go back to Salem.
This is not intended as a partisan statement. This is intended as a statement about what our communities need to ensure that their food needs are met right now.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegetoff.
Governor Tina Kotek wants to add a 50-cent surcharge to every bottle sold by the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission, known as the OLCC, to help pay for more addiction and mental health services. The OLCC, which is appointed by the governor, needs to give approval for the change. The agency held a hearing in Salem about the increase last week, and so far remains undecided about whether the surcharge is the best course. Dr. Tim Naimi, director of the Canadian Institute for Substance Use Research at the University of Victoria, testified at that hearing and said, quote, higher prices reduce total deaths from liver disease, at least seven types of cancer, motor vehicle crashes, and suicides, end quote. On the other side of the issue is the liquor and hospitality industries, who strongly oppose the price increase. They say their businesses are still trying to bounce back from the pandemic, and the surcharge would further inhibit economic recovery. Opponents of the hike also noted that Oregon's tax on liquor is the country's second highest, while our beer and wine taxes are among the lowest.
The White House says that invoking the 14th Amendment will not resolve the national debt fight. Congress looks to crack down on benefit managers at pharmacies, and Florida's governor throws his hat into the presidential race today. With more on those stories, it's Alex Gonzalez and 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
It is not going to deal with the problem that we're currently having at this moment, at this time. What we need to focus on is Congress acting.
When asked whether President Joe Biden would invoke the 14th Amendment to raise the debt ceiling, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said it would not address the root of the issue. The president met with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy Monday, but no agreement was reached. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries called for a decision.
We need action. We need movement. We don't need talking points.
There are now less than 10 days before a possible default, which economists warn could sink the U.S. economy, with government payrolls and contracts halted, a sharp drop in stock prices, business shutdowns, and layoffs. The House Oversight and Accountability Committee held a hearing to address problems relating to pharmacy benefit managers, who act as intermediaries between drug manufacturers and patients' health plans. It's estimated the three largest PBMs control 80% of the market. Republican Kentucky Representative James Comer said PBM companies steer patients to certain pharmacies and to use certain drugs for their own profit.
Today, PBMs engage in self-benefiting practices that boost their bottom line without a benefit to patients.
In addition to expensive drug costs, Maryland Representative Jamie Raskin describes the hold PBMs have as horrifying, adding medical providers are being forced to use one drug over another. Congressional Republicans expressed their support of the Halt Fentanyl Act while slamming the Biden administration for what they see as a failure to address the flow of fentanyl across the southern border. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise says 300 people die from fentanyl and related drugs every day and said President Biden refuses to take action.
He can do it on his own just by securing the southern border and stopping the drug cartels from being able to have operational control to bring this deadly drug into our country.
Scalise said Republicans plan to bring the bill to the House floor on Thursday and predicted it will likely have strong bipartisan support. An Arizona judge dismissed Carrie Lake's final claim in the Republican candidate's legal challenge of her loss in last year's race for Arizona governor. Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Peter Thompson said Lake's team failed to prove claims that the county didn't verify signatures on mail-in ballots as required by law. Lake says she plans to appeal.
I'm not prepared right now to tell you exactly what our path is because we're looking at several paths. But you've not seen the last of our case.
Finally, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is expected to launch his presidential campaign on Twitter with the company's outgoing CEO, Elon Musk, today. DeSantis' announcement is expected to shake up the Republican primary, which has been heavily dominated by former President Donald Trump. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio, which explores the federal government's possible falsification of wildfire records. At 6 p.m., it's an hour of mobilized news. Then at 7, join us for PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Your weather for tonight, clear with a low of 52. And for tomorrow, more sunshine and a high of 83. Today in history, on this day in 1930, pilot Amy Johnson landed in Darwin, in the Northern Territory of Australia, becoming the first woman to fly solo from England to Australia. Flight of over 11,000 miles. And the quote of the day is from Force of Nature and music icon Tina Turner, who passed away today at the age of 83. Tina said, quote, well, this as well. Sometimes you gotta let everything go. Purge yourself. If you are unhappy with anything, whatever is bringing you down, get rid of it. Because you'll find out that when you are free, your true creativity, your true self, comes out.
The U.S. House of Representatives voted today to block President Biden's student debt relief program. Biden said if they did so, he would veto that move. Suzanne Potter has some details.
The House of Representatives is set to vote today on a bill that would repeal President Joe Biden's plan to wipe out $10,000 to $20,000 in student loan debt for more than 30 million borrowers. Opponents are invoking the Congressional Records Act, which allows lawmakers to nullify recently passed bills. Mike Pierce with the Student Borrower Protection Center says the bill could also revive some debt already canceled under the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program.
The student debt CRA scheme would reinstate the student loan debt of more than 260,000 public service workers nationwide, drop a nearly $20 billion debt burden onto the backs of these hardworking teachers, nurses, first responders, and service members still emerging from the pandemic.
Opponents complain that Biden's plan simply transfers the debt to taxpayers. The president has threatened to veto the act should it cross his desk. A new study by the American Federation of Teachers and the Student Borrower Protection Center finds that more than 615,000 public employees have had $42 billion in debt canceled via the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program since 2007. The program allows participants to discharge the remainder of their debt after 10 years in the field. Dr. Jessica St. Paul is a physician's assistant and professor who teaches public health in the Los Angeles Community College District. She says she no longer has to pay back $144,000 thanks to the PSLF program.
I need to release this burden of student loan debt. That's one less thing that I need to be concerned about. I don't have to worry about taking multiple jobs. So now I can truly, truly focus on doing what I love doing. And I don't see myself ever leaving public service.
Biden's student debt cancellation plan was blocked by the courts before it could go into effect and goes before the U.S. Supreme Court in June. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A coalition of Southwest tribes is urging President Joe Biden to establish a new national monument of more than 1 million acres near the Grand Canyon. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A push to establish a new national monument near the Grand Canyon gained steam recently with the visit of U.S. Interior Secretary De Pollant. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, for years, tribes and environmentalists have advocated for added protections in the area.
Holland met with leaders of the Havasupai, Hopi, Wallapai, and other members of the Grand Canyon Tribal Coalition. They're urging President Joe Biden to declare the Bajnoavjo Itakukvini Grand Canyon National Monument. The meeting highlighted the tribe's connections to the area and their efforts to protect more than 1 million acres adjacent to the park from future uranium and other hard rock mining. Carletta Tulusi is a former Havasupai Council member and a spokesperson for the coalition.
This attempt to declare the Grand Canyon a national monument is very historical because all the tribes once again have come together to unite in one voice and one mission.
Tribes and conservation groups say uranium mining threatens the Grand Canyon's environment, as well as many sacred sites and tribal water resources. The mining industry, however, maintains that modern extraction methods are safe. A 20-year federal moratorium halted new claims in 2012, but a monument designation would make the mining ban permanent. Previous attempts have failed in Congress since 2008, but the current push is being driven by tribes and is aimed at a presidential proclamation through the Antiquities Act. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
After a recent two-day trial, a Ketchikan Superior Court judge ruled that a list of 14 traditional tribal values can keep its place in Ketchikan schools in Alaska. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
The values were created years ago by Southeast Alaska Native leaders and include items like hold each other up and speak with care. But parents Justin Brees and Rebecca King sued the school district, alleging that one of the values, reverence for our creator, was a religious statement that violated the First Amendment's Establishment Clause. They asked for the posters to be taken down from common areas and removed from a behavior reward system at Ketchikan Charter School. They wanted the values incorporated into lessons instead. King testified during the first day of the trial.
I interpret it as a promotion of creationism, whether that be by Raven or God or another supernatural entity outside of ourselves or science.
Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's president, Rosita Worrell, testified as an expert witness on behalf of the district.
In our culture, reverence for, you know, our creator, you know, doesn't refer to any god or any deity that we worship. That's absolutely not, you know, within our culture. Within our culture, creator could refer to multiple beings.
In the written decision, Judge Catherine Librand said that the plaintiffs didn't prove the statement was religious. And Librand ruled, even if it was religious, it still wouldn't be a violation of the clause because the display of the posters isn't forcing a certain behavior. In Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Tribal leaders, school officials, advocates, and students are gathering at the California State Capitol in Sacramento Wednesday. They're asserting rights for Native students to wear tribal regalia at graduation ceremonies. A 2018 law authorizes the wearing of tribal regalia at graduation. According to Native American Assembly member James Ramos, beaded caps, eagle feathers, plumes, and sashes are among adornments schools are prohibiting at graduations against the law. Ramos will be leading the event. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Month, and one important issue that often goes unreported in their community is domestic violence. Advocates for women are trying to open more doors to help and support. Nadia Romlagan has more on the story from Ohio.
May is Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, and according to the Asian Pacific Institute on Gender-Based Violence, the number of Asian American women who have experienced sexual violence could be as high as 55%. Bilingual advocate Monica Yonggang with Asian Services in Action Ohio explains various cultural barriers may prevent many API survivors, including immigrants and refugees, from reporting sexual violence and accessing services.
We also noticed that internalized like a traditional gender norms, meaning that the men have more power over women and some violence against women are just justified and okay.
The Immigrant and Refugee Ohio Coalition to End Sexual Assault hosts a conference this Friday, May 26th, on sexual violence and the best ways to serve communities and survivors. Leela Karki, also with Asian Services in Action Ohio, points out concerns about public shame also factor into women's hesitancy to seek help. Taylor Ucker-Lauderman at the Ohio Alliance to End Sexual Violence says it's important for advocacy groups to take into account specific cultural needs when providing services.
We find it extremely important to uplift the work and voices of those in various cultures, and especially people of color, immigrants, and refugees. We believe this is truly integral to ending sexual violence and serving survivors in our state.
Research shows sexual assault has many long-term impacts on women, including increased risk of chronic pain, diabetes, depression, suicide, and substance abuse. This is Nadia Romlagan for Ohio News Connection.
Once nearly abandoned, the Lloyd Center Mall has found new life recently thanks to a number of small local businesses who have taken residence there. However, the future of the mall is still in jeopardy. The Portland Diamond Project, whose goal is to bring Major League Baseball to Portland, is considering replacing the mall with a stadium. The Diamond Project has pursued other properties in the Portland area, including Port of Portland Terminals 1 and 2, the Central Post Office, and the Portland Public Schools headquarters. So far, though, it has been unable to make a deal on any property. The Lloyd Center has many advantages, including existing infrastructure and mass transit access that would be helpful for the stadium. However, a stadium in that location would also strongly affect adjacent neighborhoods and greatly increase area traffic. Proponents of the project tell the Oregonian that the ultimate goal is to lure a team to Portland when Major League Baseball expands to 32 teams in the near future.
Livestock are degrading important grizzly habitat in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem as a result of a 2019 U.S. Forest Service decision. Eric Galatis has more on this story from Wyoming.
Critical Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem grizzly bear habitat has been degraded by a 2019 U.S. Forest Service decision to allow over 17,000 livestock to graze in Wyoming's Upper Green River Basin, according to a new report. John Carter, an ecologist and report co-author, says 84% of the area is designated as wildlife emphasis in the forest plan.
The area that this decision covers places a priority on wildlife. But what we have in reality is a livestock emphasis with wildlife way down in the order of priorities as far as any evidence we've seen.
The Forest Service decided to put cattle in the project area, even though that's where more than half of all grizzly deaths in western Wyoming happened between 2010 and 2014. All were due to conflicts with cattle. Grizzlies are classified as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act. The agency has not yet responded to a request for comment. The Forest Service is not following the best scientific practices for managing livestock grazing, according to the report, which found a significant decline in the forage plants that should be present. A single adult cow and calf can weigh up to 1,600 pounds due to added hormones and antibiotics, but Carter says the agency's stocking rate assumes the total weight is just 1,000 pounds.
When in reality, they weigh double that and they're consuming double the rate that the Forest Service is claiming when they calculate a stocking rate. And so you've got some very basic fundamentals that are being glossed over in order to perpetuate the status quo.
The Forest Service is supposed to manage publicly owned resources for long-term sustainability, but Carter says there has been a gradual decline over time. He adds laws passed in the 1960s and 70s to protect watersheds from overgrazing and logging have been weakened by industry lobbyists.
Basically, you've got a system set up where the industry is essentially in control of the agency. It's called regulatory capture. And so the public really is out of the loop here.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
It's Wednesday, and that means a visit from KBOO News poet Dan Raphael. Today, he says it's time to keep score.
Where's the ref to call a penalty of offensive hypocrisy on congressional Republicans? They say they want to reduce deficits while increasing the defense budget and giving more tax breaks to the wealthy. Deficit's got nothing to do with it. The point is to shatter government at the expense of us citizens for the benefits of the elite who collect more money from the government than they put in. They're stooges representing states that get more benefits than the taxes they pay. There's no referee, no rule book, and Wall Street keeps the score. This isn't a sport or a game. This isn't fair or honest or easily changed. We can't afford tickets to the game. Do we watch from home, stay unaware of seasons and championships, or jump the fence and disrupt? As even the players are shadows, teams owned by investment firms and hedge funds in a league where one senator can be on many teams, while 99% of us can only sweep up what's left after quarterly victory parades. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 24th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael. The producer is Michelle Coppola, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Mike Moen, Nadia Romlagan, Suzanne Potter, and Alex Gonzalez. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members, to whom only the highest of superlatives do justice. If you would like to become part of this distinguished class of members and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
Hey folks, before we get started, a quick note about campaigns the Coast Range Association is working on. Our last episode was all about the effort to conserve a huge swath of Oregon's state forest, and I hope you'll give that a listen and go to coastrange.org/stateforests for more information. Second, the Biden administration is accepting public comment now through June 19th on a proposed rule protecting mature and old-growth forests on federal land. This is a really big deal, and you can learn more about that and get involved at climate-forests.org. Finally, Coast Range Association is putting on a series of speaking events in communities throughout Oregon. To find out when we're coming to your area or if you're interested in helping bring us to your community, subscribe to our newsletter at coastrange.org, or you can email me, michael@coastrange.org. Okay, on with the show. Welcome to Coast Range Radio, a production of the Coast Range Association. I'm your host, Michael Gaskill. Wildfires are a fact of life in the American West. They've played a major role in our Western ecosystems for millennia. But as the climate crisis deepens and more people move into wildfire country, fires loom larger and larger in the public consciousness. Wildfires are reshaping everything from our landscapes to our politics, and the implications of how we respond to them will play a huge role in shaping our future.